think about you being well-oiled. That's disgusting.
Greetings, Apropossi, and welcome to the Apropos of Nothing podcast. Buckle up for the sex. For Salsa.
And Jenna.
And special guest.
Eric.
Yay.
Eric Thompson.
As you can tell, that is not the camera. One person's microphone not working. That is a lack of a James. We are missing a James because James is doing auditions or something tonight.
Yeah, he's like actually got things to do. It's weird.
No, I don't understand.
I don't remember that.
How does that work?
He may or may not
be joining us later, but we have Eric here, so we don't need him.
Probably depends on how his audition goes. If it goes really well, he'll be here.
Oh, God. Well, I believe he is the auditioner.
I stand by my statement.
Oh, that's fair.
Let's get started. What are we drinking? Jenna.
I am drinking.
It's not January anymore.
I know, right? I'm done with all of my virgin hot toddies, and I've moved on to. So this comes with a story. Facebook likes to throw ads at me for things it thinks I would like. I don't know if you guys have noticed this trend. I know it's new and completely subtle.
However, all of the Wish ads.
Oh, I've got so many Wish ads. You have no idea. But it gives me ads outside of Wish too. I get other ads. And Facebook has, the algorithms have rightly discovered that I like subscriptions to things, and not having to think about things and just having random things show up at my door. And the best random thing that I could think of to show up at my door is wine. And Facebook figured this out, too.
That's a pretty good thing to have show up at your door.
Right. And so, like, it started showing me these ads, and I was like, okay, well, this is cool, but I wonder if there's, like, different types of these things. Like, Facebook showed me that this was a thing, and I went, I must research this more and do some analytics and maybe run some metrics on it. So I did some research, and I discovered Naked Wines. And what they are, it's not quite a subscription base, but they take a chunk of money out of my bank account every month, and I get credit. So, like, they're getting that money every month regardless. But it is money that I can use to go towards purchasing wine off of their website. Cool. What that money does is it helps support startup wineries, vineyards, and people trying to get into the wine game.
I feel like someone's trying to sell me a timeshare.
I kind of. But then I can purchase their wine at, I think it's like 30% discount or something, with the credit that I've already put in there, right? I don't know. It feels kind of like Columbia House, and now I'm going to have to purchase like 11 more CDs or something. But in the meantime, wine. And it was, in fact, delivered not quite to my door, to the delivery mail area in my apartment building, but I've been eager to try this because I've had this wine sitting on my wine rack for like 3 weeks. Just looking at me as I'm like, I'm not drinking you yet. So what I have is called Small and Small. It's a 2020 Sauvignon Blanc. The back says, we are a small winemaking family from a small wine-producing country at the bottom of the world. Our Sauvignon Blanc is full of all the things we love about Marlborough wines. Vibrant, refreshing, and full of local character. And some more stuff. But yeah, so it's a Sauvignon Blanc, and I'm drinking it from in my off-the-vine wine-tasting stemless wine glass.
I approve.
Oh.
I am drinking whiskey and Dr. Pepper. And that is two different drinks. So I am starting first with the whiskey, and later I might get to the Dr. Pepper.
That's fair. That is 100% fair. Mm-hmm. Also, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a... So my wife was at the liquor store the other day, and she called me up and said, hey, do you need some beer? And I said, yes. So she brought home this interesting bottle. It is Abraxas Perennial Artisan Ales. Perennial Artisan Ales is the manufacturer, and this beer is called Abraxas, and it is an ale brewed with ancho chili peppers, cacao nibs, cinnamon, and vanilla.
Oh,
so this is gonna probably have a like Mexican mocha thing going on, probably.
Yeah,
is my guess. It is also 11.5 alcohol by volume, so it is also not fucking around. So we will find out.
Ooh.
Well, if it does have that good hint of like the Mexican chocolate kind of thing going on, we'll have to pass that on to Bree, because I know that's a thing she really loves in a beer.
Oh shit, that's really fucking good.
Yeah. Does it taste like hops?
Probably. I mean, okay. It's 11.5%, so all you taste is just that thickness.
Right.
No, it's really creamy. It's okay. Very creamy. It does say on the bottle I'm looking at, it does say contains lactose. So it definitely gives it a creaminess. It's got the ancho chili spice in there, which is a nice subtle spice. It's not like a jalapeno spice that's really sharp.
Sure.
It's that ancho.
It's not jalapeno face.
Oh my god. But that
James is not here. Let James not be here.
But it has that round ancho chili spice to it. And the cocoa is kind of subtle. It's not thick like a dessert beer. It just kind of gives it a more roundness and more smooth flavor. And then the cinnamon and vanilla just kind of give it a little bit of something. It's really good, actually.
So you said the spice is kind of like warm and subtle for the chili. Does it linger? Like if you feel like if you took another sip it would build, or does it by the time you hit the finish has it kind of run its course?
Yeah, it doesn't linger. It really does. You take a drink and it kind of hits your mouth, and the cinnamon and the ancho kind of work to warm it up, but then you swallow it and then the vanilla and the cocoa rinse everything down. Just leave your mouth with this nice, velvety, chocolatey aftertaste, and it's really, really nice.
I think for something that's like rich and creamy, I think that's what I'd prefer, for the chili to be able to be done by the time the sip is done.
Yeah, it absolutely
does. I've also had stuff that's been more of like, kind of like a fruitier or like a sour kind of beer that's had a good amount of chili, and I think a build there works. I think it really depends on everything else around it.
See, I did for Febtoberfest years back, I did a Mexican mocha stout, and that was I used ancho chili and I used cacao and vanilla. I didn't use cinnamon, but I started with a cream ale. And it was similar to this, but the cinnamon that they've put in here really does round everything out a little bit, and I think they've got a better balance of the flavors that I had. Whereas mine was more of a dessert beer, whereas this is it's not a dessert beer. It's got the cocoa, it's got the cinnamon, it's got the vanilla, but it's not a dessert beer. It's just those are flavors, not a style. You know, also by
this one for the meal and yours for the chaser.
Yeah, but this one has also got that increased alcohol volume, and that increased alcohol volume also does give it a much thicker mouthfeel as well, so.
Fair.
It's quite lovely. No, I think they nailed it.
Very nice.
So, anyway.
What was that called again?
Abraxas. Abraxas.
Very cool.
With perennial artisan ales from St. Louis, Missouri.
Might have to see if I can find that.
So, anyway.
Awesome.
So I did tell my wife that I will be on the podcast tonight, just to give her a heads up, and she goes, oh, so it's AON, so I'll probably yell things in the background because it doesn't matter.
Hi, Jess.
Hi.
Appreciate you.
So I just figured I'd give everyone a heads up. That will probably happen at some point.
Awesome.
Oh, good.
Fantastic. So what's everybody been up to?
Yep.
Cool.
I'm like, what have I been up to? There's some changes going on at work that have me nervous, so I'm really excited for that. But it's not really something I can get into, so I'm basically just on edge right now.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fair. Well, I'll go. Okay. Did I mention this last week that my neck was fucked up? Yes or no?
You told me, but I wasn't on the podcast last week, so
well,
no idea.
So in that case, I'll back up in case I
don't know. I don't remember what happened from week to week.
So no, that's fine. So 2 weeks ago on Wednesday, it was election day. I was sitting at my desk, or not election day.
Inauguration.
Inauguration. Thank you.
I was confused.
No, I saw the look on your face and realized I had made a mistake.
That's how I normally convey people's mistakes.
Yeah,
to
I mean
them.
This
yeah.
This is a normal for me. No, it was inauguration day, and I was at work, but I was sitting at work in my chair. I wasn't doing anything extreme in any way, shape, or form, but I somehow messed up my neck. It was really bad. I had very limited mobility. I could look maybe 30 degrees to the right, and maybe 20 degrees to the left, and no degrees down, and maybe 30 degrees up. Very limited mobility in my neck. And as time went on, like, I would wake up in the morning, it'd be really stiff, but throughout the day it would kind of loosen up, but it was still there. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning, overnight, it would stiffen up again. And it was becoming just, you know, this thing. And I was like, okay, well, eventually time will go on, it will eventually work itself out. But then the following week, a week later, it was still stiff, and then I was shoveling the sidewalk because it snowed, and I fucked up my neck again, and it was really bad. So I contacted a friend of mine who's a physical therapist, and he made a house call, and he put acupuncture in my neck. Oh, Jenna just got weird.
Oh, God, needles.
I'm sorry. As somebody who's had staples in their, literal staples in their back, this was...
I got the best / worst seat of the house for that, you motherfucker.
I know, I made good money off that.
Yeah.
But no, he acupunctured my neck, and then he put the electrodes on there, you know, to do the electric therapy. And he was like, okay, I'm going to slowly turn this up. Tell me at what point, you know, you can bear it. And I was like, look who you're talking to. Seriously, crank that shit up.
You know better.
So So, you know, he got to like medium, and he was like, "I'm gonna stop there." And I was like, "You could go further." And he's like, "I'm gonna stop there." Yes, you can handle more, but I'm not gonna give anyone more.
You're not getting your fix from me.
Said the masochist to the sadist, "Hurt me." Said the sadist to the masochist, "No."
No.
So anyway, so he does that, and then he, you know, but so while he was, so there was the one needle that he put in my shoulder. And Jenna, I'm sorry, Jenna, you're going to cringe a lot.
Sorry.
You can probably mute if you want
to. Just keep going. I'm just going to keep drinking.
But he was like, you know, it. You know, if your shoulder twitches or anything, that's good, because that means we're hitting just the right spot, and it's trying to release. You know, I was like, okay, and so he starts sticking this one into my shoulder, and suddenly my arm starts bucking like a fucking rodeo bull, like completely involuntary spasms, but my arm is just thrashing.
Please tell me you slapped him.
And he would, but he's like on me, you know, holding down my arm because he's sticking a needle in my arm. But he's holding my arm down, and he's just like, "Yeah, that's the spot right there." And I'm like, "Yes."
Did you have a cigarette afterwards?
I wish I could, because it was great. Oh, it felt so amazing afterwards. But we got done. You know, he did that. He took the electrodes off, took the needles out, and then he did the actual adjustment on my neck. And just, I mean, you could have heard those cracks the next county over, because my neck just cracked. And
is that what that was hearing? Okay.
And suddenly I felt amazing, and I've felt just absolutely fantastic the past couple days. And so I've been mobile. I can still feel a stiffness in my neck. He said that I have one of my discs is basically was irritated because of everything, and so when the disc finally heals, when the swelling in the disc goes down, then the pain will go away. But it's just something that'll take a couple days for that to wear away. But suddenly I had mobility, which is fantastic, and so now I'm like, I went over to a friend of mine's. He was giving us a I say us. He's giving my wife. I'm allowed to use it if she says it's okay. These are his words. A friend of ours gave us, he inherited a radial arm saw, and to his credit, he was like, "I don't have the room in the shop for it, and radial arm saws is just not something I've ever used before, so this is a tool that I'm not familiar with, you know." Whereas my wife, she's like, "I've used radial arm saws in scene shop for years. I will take it." Yes. So we inherited that from him, and so I was able to go to his place and finally and get it, because I was able to lift it. So now I have a brand new radial arm, very old radial arm saw in the garage.
New to you.
New to me, yes.
Also, that totally sounds like something he would say.
So that's what I, and then because I was finally able to move again, I was able to get out to the lathe again. I haven't touched my lathe in almost a month because it's been so cold, first of all, and then my neck was all sore. So I got out, and I got to play with my lathe a little bit and get some turning done, and it felt amazing. Felt really, really good.
Very nice.
Nice.
So I was able to use my Christmas present for the first time, and it was... wonderful. I got a new bowl gouge from my kids, actually. And all of the tools I have right now or have had have been spindle tools. And spindle is where you're working with the object spinning in front of you, across from you, right?
Think like a rung in a banister. Or like on a where you would be walking up the stairs and kind of each individual rung going down along the way,
yeah.
Those are each turned on a lathe for like spindles.
Yep. Yeah. It's going across you, it's table legs, things like that. And they use different tools than you do for bowls, which are on the end. You know, it's spinning
right
laterally to you. So the tools for spindles – work more like peeling an onion. You know, you've got the layers in front of you, and you work away from yourself towards the core, and it's peeling layers away as it turns, right?
Sure.
Whereas a bowl gouge is meant to cut, you know, laterally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I was turning this thing, and it was just going slow, and I was like, okay, I'm going to give this bowl gouge a chance. Just oh, it was orgasmic. It was so good. I was just able to cut across instead of slowly peeling it away. I was just cut through it. It was so good. It was so good.
Wow,
so good.
Like every time you talk about doing this stuff, I go back to when I was doing ceramics and throwing clay on a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And like I use that idea of motion. Mm-hmm. And so like you're talking about a bowl gouge, I'm like, okay, like for me though, it would be going straight down.
Exactly.
But for you,
yep,
it's going in. Mm-hmm. And then doing things on the side. Well, that's where I'm using my hands, the spindle.
No, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
To pull that up and mm-hmm. whatever. So yeah, I like comparing physics in my mind while you're talking about
it. No, absolutely. Whenever I watch like a clay show, you know, one of these clay contests or the glass blowing contests or anything where they're making something that is similar to something that I can make on the lathe, it's interesting watching the different ways. Whereas with turning on a lathe, obviously there's only one way to go. It's chipping away anything that is extra until all that is left is the shape. Whereas with clay, you know, you're building it and you're expanding it and contracting it here and there, and you're able to to shift things up and
like
down and sideways.
If you accidentally huck a chunk off of the clay, well, you haven't just fucked everything up. You can still smush and reapply and shove it back together, mm-hmm. or just re-knead everything and do it again or whatever.
Right.
But you fuck up wood, you can't really reapply that too easily.
But even then,
it's just
even then, like if you take a chunk out of it, you can just take another piece of clay and slap it into the place that it was. But it's going to be very obviously, you know, it's going to be a different thickness, it'll be off balance and things like that. And so just the process of building up the clay in a way that as you move your hands, it pulls and stretches the clay in such a way so that, you know, when you are creating like a hollow form, for example, when you are starting to close it off at the top, you know, you're not pushing too hard so the whole thing collapses, but you're you know, pushing it at a certain speed and so that it doesn't warp.
Gently
exactly. You know, it's a completely different beast to wood. And then glass, for example, is more along those lines, but you've got a completely different set of things to worry about in the temperature of the glass needs to be removed.
Yeah.
And you need to that constant rotation, but then you also need very similarly the thickness and the mm-hmm. you know, things like that will change how it behaves, and it's so fascinating.
So if you're working with glass though, like you can if you're blowing it, you can adjust where your point of gravity is.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, because you can shift where it's at as you're doing things.
Yep.
And so it's more working around where the gravity is pulling down rather mm-hmm. than having it set for you where you center something.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's way more flowy working with glass from what I've seen anyway. I have zero experience.
No,
but like,
I love the fact that at the end of the day, you can make a goblet with all three. Mm-hmm. methods, but each one is so drastically mm-hmm. different than the other ones, you know, in how it's approached and how it has to be done without messing the whole process up. It's so cool.
Absolutely.
So cool. I love that shit. Anyway.
Anyway. Hi, James.
Ladies and gentlemen, James has joined the party. So it is no longer a party.
Yeah, I was going to say, it has ceased to be a party, yeah.
What you drinking, buddy?
I almost took a sip, which would have been highly unprofessional of me. But it's the El Camino Hazelnut Macaron Pastry Stout from Priez Brewing.
Pastry?
Pastry.
No, I'm sorry. Did you say pastry?
I love the dynamic between you two is as soon as Saul's is like, hold on, James like pastry. he's like, no, I'm just gonna explain it and move on.
I immediately knew what the problem was. Yeah. It's been a long ass day, and I threw myself an accent party by mistake.
It's accent day.
Yes. Accidentally accent day.
I love it.
Accidental.
I can tell you, by the time I finish this bottle, I will be speaking in tongues.
Okay.
Oh, I forgot to mention, this is a 750 bottle. So the 11.5%.
At 11?
Yep, 11.5%.
9.39.
So, yeah, no, I'm going to be enjoying life by the time I finish this thing.
You're going to sleep real good tonight, and maybe a little bit tomorrow morning, too.
Oh, I wish.
Awkward. Hey, James, what have you been up to?
Auditions. I'm a director for this year's Fearless Five. Our theme is space. I'm very enthusiastic about what I have going on, and we had an absolutely gangbusters audition. These 2 days, yeah.
How many of them did you want to keep, James?
I learned my lesson. at least I learned a lesson.
No, learning the lesson and having it be an easy thing is not the same thing.
I know that James learned something because he did not call it an lesson.
Yes. Yes. An lesson is when I'm in the hospital.
I'm glad that you learned something.
Yeah, when I ran myself over with my own car, that was an lesson.
Oh, God.
So there's that. Everybody was super phenomenal, but there were people for me who really clicked into very specific places.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then when it came time for the five directors to compare notes, we were all like, this person, this person, this person, and then we've got these, you know, other people that we think would be great for, you know, whatever other parts if other people want them instead.
Right.
And all of our lists overlapped.
Good.
Nice.
Oh my God. Has that ever happened?
It's been a challenge. The first year, absolutely not.
Yeah.
The second year, I think we got pretty close.
I think the second year is the only one that I wasn't involved before this year, so. Mm-hmm.
I directed during this year.
Maybe it's my fault.
Maybe.
And I don't even choose anything. I just sit there. I'm like, all right,
I think
guys.
Eric is good, and you're all willing to blame you, yeah.
I think last year there was a couple people that it was pretty clear everybody liked them, but didn't necessarily have a role for them.
Yeah,
sure. And that's a really tough thing when casting.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who I'm like, I love what you can do, and I love working with you, but you don't fit any of the things I need, so I can't cast you.
And so that's kind of where some of our strife came from, is because they were like, here's a couple people that we know are going to make it in, but for these couple other shows, they don't fit, so we need other people. for those roles. Yeah. And so the other people is where a lot of the fight came from, is because I liked these other people and the other person liked these other people and things like that. So that's kind of where some of the problem came from, is the back end of the list. The front end is simple.
If I remember right, my year for casting, I basically went, I have a role that's a walk-on. I don't need anything specific for it, so I'm more or less just not going to cast it. And I will cast it out of other people's pools.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
My main character, I had decided that I really wanted Jason Krueger for that. And I basically was like, that is who I'm casting. I have maybe one possible backup, but that's who I want to cast. Angela Fox and Brianna Cecile. And I was like, you know, I have maybe like one backup for each of them. But like those three, I was like, I need four characters. Those three I'm pretty set on. And I got lucky that other people wanted to use them as well.
Yeah.
In different situations, so it was pretty easy to be like, okay, here's where I'm going to push because I really want this person, and other people are like, I could use them but could use other people, and here are areas where I'm just not going to push at all. And it's a weird balance, but it's interesting to learn how to cast collectively.
Yeah. Well,
especially because we had one person who when offered the job turned it down.
Yeah.
And that threw chaos into the mix because that was a very specific idea for me in this role, and the backup I had was a completely different person than the backup that somebody else had. And so we kind of had to go through a second round of negotiations figure out how to cast that and make everything fit. And so that was, yeah.
Well, and I know there was one year that Jenna was overseeing while Tim was out of town that people had some personal reasons that they had to step away. And now you have these people that are kind of weaved into multiple shows.
Yeah.
And they're leaving, and you have to figure out how to get people that fit so many different things for different directors.
Right, exactly.
And it was such a complicated web.
Well, and I think the hardest part for that was that we were already at least 1 week, if not 2 weeks, into rehearsals.
Yeah.
So not only did we need to find people that could fit for everything, but that could learn quickly.
Yeah.
Really, really quickly. So yeah, that was the year Tim was the producer, and he took off for Disneyland for 2 weeks, and suddenly we had two people drop out, and I was like, oh Jesus, fuck, now I'm in charge.
Yeah.
Why?
I remember that headache, yeah.
I got that call in a restaurant.
Oh God.
And had to excuse myself from the restaurant to go take that call, and you know, tell my 12 or 13 friends who were there with me, just like, it's okay, this is what I would like to order, please order for me. I
will be back in 1 hour's time.
Right.
Make sure they don't put avocado on it. I'll be back.
Yeah, so everybody who thinks directing's easy.
Well, I think the one thing I have a lot of actor friends, right? Mm-hmm. Surprise.
The hell you say? Theater name dropper.
All of the names.
Genre dropping, wasn't she?
All of the names.
I'll see some of them get down on themselves when they don't get a part that they auditioned for that they really wanted.
Yeah.
And like, I'm always like, they're like, what did I do wrong? And I'm like, you did nothing wrong. I wasn't even at your audition. You did nothing wrong.
Yep.
There were 15 people that were good for that role. Mm-hmm. You were probably one of them, but they can't cast all 15 of you.
Yep.
They can only cast one. And maybe it was a scheduling thing. Maybe the chemistry between this person and that person worked out better. Maybe they wanted Maybe their costuming runs on the bigger side and you're on the smaller side. Maybe it, like, there could be so many different variables that go into this.
When it gets down to the very end and you've got two equally good candidates, you start looking for the most silly reasons to exclude someone, because you have to exclude someone. And so you start, it's at that point you might as well be flipping a coin.
Yeah. It's stuff like, you know, here are the three people I want to cast, but looking at their schedules, we need to rehearse on Tuesdays, and one of the people I want to cast isn't available on Tuesday, but my second choice for that role is. So I'm going to go with my second choice, because even though it's not my favorite, we can actually rehearse.
Exactly that.
Yep. Yeah. So.
Yep.
Yeah. If you, dear listener, are an actor. And what did I do wrong? The answer is probably nothing. 95% of the time, the answer is you didn't do a goddamn thing wrong.
Except you, Chad. You know what you did.
Oh, Chad.
I know a Chad that if he heard it, he'd be like, yeah. Yeah, you're
right. I know Chad.
We all know that Chad.
Yeah, no.
and it's tough because the rate that people get rejections for people to actually work in acting usually means that they have to go to as many auditions as possible.
Yep.
And if there's a point where suddenly they have auditioned for enough things that two people want to cast them,
yeah.
Now they're looking at a role and saying, well, which one do I want to do more? Which one pays better? Which is the better opportunity? Mm-hmm. And at some point, they're going to have to say, I have to pick one of these, and I'm picking this one, and sometimes your production isn't that one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that sucks. But that's just kind of the truth of it.
Yeah. It's a hard game, y'all.
It is. So a lot going on.
It absolutely is.
A lot going
full of
on.
Rejection and second lovers. I don't remember what that line is from, but I love it.
That was very noir of you, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was something older, like a black and white something, but yeah.
Well, should we take a break?
Sure.
Yeah, I think we should.
Black and white something is my AHA cover band.
A lot going on, so.
Sorry, two of you were talking at the same time, so. Since I didn't catch half of it, I'm just going to say we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a little bit.
Hey, everybody. You should like us on Facebook, apropos of nothing. You could follow us on Twitter at AON Podcast, or you could join our Steam group at AON Podcast. Search for apropos of nothing.
Oh, and we're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm James.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Eric.
Yeah. We're all here.
Friends, this beer is amazing.
What are you drinking?
Well, it's the El Camino Hazelnut Macaron Pastry Stout.
Damn it.
from Prius Brewing, which is apparently a local brewery, but it is not at all bitter. It is very chocolatey, and it's just gorgeous.
Is it one of those beers that if you get me drunk enough, I might actually drink it?
I was going to say, I don't even know that you would have to be drunk, Jenna.
Oh, I have not found the hops in something. What?
So I mean, that's your secret. You're always drunk, Jenna.
I mean, there is that.
But it's 9% alcohol by volume. The IBU, the International Bitterness Units, is only 28. It is extremely smooth and very sweet. It tastes like a chocolate shake.
I still want to have at least a tipsy on that, but that sounds like something that, you know. I would, you know, I, oh, like, I was going to say, like Joe, you just give me a couple of beers, I'll do that, and I'll be fine.
It's, yeah.
What's Joe's international bitterness unit?
Okay.
Joe's international bitterness unit is like 74, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, what's the top of the scale?
He is not a... I mean, he can be smooth, but he's not a smooth fellow. He's,
I love the guy, but I haven't seen him be smooth.
That's, yeah. This beer hasn't shown me its nipples yet, so that's a clear distinction.
I mean, I've seen him be smooth, but it was his chest.
Oh, that's...
Yes, also that. I've seen him be smooth, but that was because he has a sweater shaver.
Oh,
that you lift.
Yes, I did.
God damn it, James.
Yeah. So,
number one, why do you do these things? Number two, why do you encourage Joe? Like, that's number two might be the more important question.
I don't make things better, I just make them more.
You don't make things better, you just make them.
Yeah,
For the love of God, what are we going to talk about today?
Eric, talk about something.
Yeah.
Anything.
Speaking
there
of making
possibly
things.
Anything that you could talk about, Eric, that could be worse than this.
I mean, I could try.
Challenge accepted.
What I'll start with is... in October, I started working on resin because it was a thing I've always wanted to do, and kind of started to understand it a bit more and kind of pulled the trigger on actually doing it. And that quickly turned into like, oh, if I want to do the thing I want to do, that means that I need to order this. Oh, that means that I need to learn how to use this tool. Oh, I need this thing. And then just kind of spiraled down a rabbit hole.
Craft creep.
Yep.
The craft
so right
is
now,
real.
Not a nice thing to call anybody.
So
even if
my
they are Eric Thompson.
That's fair. My latest new toy is something that I believe Salsa has that we talked about. It is called Micro Mesh.
Yeah.
And it is so when you're like sanding wood, normal grits that people would use are like 80 grit for really rough things, and then when you get up to like 280 or so, that's where you're getting to very like smooth finishes on wood. That's where you'd like stain it. When you're doing stuff like resin, you have to go a lot higher. And while I was sanding to 3000 grit before, these micro mesh pads go up to 12,000 grit. So compared to like the 40 or 80 grit most people would start with sanding on like a belt sander, these are ridiculously smooth in their use for sanding, which is kind of crazy. So I spent all day using the micro mesh on these, so I can actually show you some of them for the listeners to explain it. James and Bryn have a neck, a baby neck, and they got me some of the shed from this neck. And that shed has been put into these pendants. So I have basically made these pendants with random colors behind them. And I have sanded them to be fairly clear. So you can see like the snakeskin pattern in the pendant itself.
That would fit possibly well. Yeah.
So I'm trying to do some good lights so that you can see them, but...
Right now,
crazy.
For the listeners' benefit, Eric is lit from below as if telling us a ghost story about his resin.
So, these will all turn into like necklaces and things. So, this is a good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy.
It's like bricks. That snakeskin pattern, it looks like bricks when it's
up,
on the pendant like that. Well, that rectangular pendant especially.
And there were so many like different sizes of the scale pattern in it. So some of them are like very tiny, like almost like you would think like a honeycomb pattern. Mm-hmm. But that's something I've been working on recently. I've made a bunch of dice sets that I've just been having a bunch of fun being like, if you're somebody who likes to collect dice, imagine at any point in time being able to go, what kind of dice do I want? Let me just make them. Mm. It is such a weird power to have. there is one point where there was like, so I go to a site called solarcolordust.com because they have some really nice pigment.
Yes.
Some like really reasonable priced colors that you can mix into things. And they started sending me samples for a new site they were starting up called Glitter Hippo, which is a wonderful name. So there was one point where they had a sale going on, and I bought like $40 worth of random glitters just to get like a catalog of these glitters, and they are all gorgeous. I'm a person who like hates glitter at Fest, but these are beautiful.
And contained in resin, like
yes, and contained in resin. That's helpful.
That is a like, difference.
I ordered like a holo glitter, HOLO, and used that to fully create a dice set that is all made out of like red shimmer glitter. So it's just very
Eric,
sparkly.
You have pictures of these, right?
I have some, just kind of across my Facebook.
Yeah, and you want to send a couple to Salsa? He can probably just post it in our group.
Yeah, I'll throw it on the show notes.
Especially those red glitter ones. They look very dramatic when lit from below, but you've shown me a different picture angle on them, which I think really
they just kind of shimmer.
Amazing, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the light at my desk is not designed for pictures. That's why I never take any pictures.
It's designed for ghost stories.
What?
Now I want to have a light coming out from down below.
Yeah, no, Eric will just, like, Facebook message me that, like, hey, guess what? This site has a sale on colors right now. And I'll be like, you son of a bitch. All right, I brought some.
I'm like, you're welcome.
Like,
there's a point the other day where I was like, hey, there's a sale on lathe tools here. And so I was like, no, I'm good. I already spent my budget. And I'm like, damn, now I've looked in the link that I sent. God damn it.
That one backfired.
That one backfired.
But it was the color that he just mentioned a little bit ago. It was right before Christmas, and he was like, "They're having stocking stuffer sales right now." It was like a put together your own variety pack, and I'm like, "Fuck!
Oh,
all right, I just bought myself a stocking stuffer."
Yeah, it's like there's a bunch of little satchels that are all good for like one project, so you can just be like, "Cool, I'm gonna try out this project, and if I really like the color, then I can actually." Buy that color. But it's fun to just, that site is a black hole. That's what that site is.
Yes,
you
it
go
is.
There and you're like, I need one thing, and then you're like, ooh,
but also
what are these?
I have resisted.
I need this lamp.
I have resisted looking at the hippo one so far because I can't right now. I need to not, but someday.
Well,
that's gotta be their motto.
What's that?
What really got me for that one is I had gotten a sample for like a shimmer glitter that they had that was called Tree Frog that was just this brilliant green glitter, and on a whim I put it in a project, and it was a project I made for Merit that was a like a magical kind of river going through a piece of wood to use as a bottom for a terrarium. And I'm like, sure, green glitter, that'll work. And I just tossed a little bit in there. And as I was like sanding the project or moving it or whatever, occasionally it would just move a little bit and you'd just see this brilliant flash of green that just cut through everything else. And it's like, damn. it's not just like, you know, here's a little sparkly like tinge of something. It was just like, I'm going to cut through everything completely. And it's like, okay, you know, I'm impressed now.
I also got the little sample from Glitter Hippo, and I have mm-hmm. not had the chance to even look at it yet. So someday.
Yeah, the samples got me. I'll admit, the samples got me.
That's why they do it.
I was poking around in like solar color dust. I found like all this color shifting stuff. And there's one thing... Like, the more I think about it, the more I figure out ways that I want to use different things. Like, there's one that's a thermal... They have, like, a thermal pigment that when it hits a certain temperature, it goes clear. I'm like, why would I want that? That if you add heat, it goes clear. And then as I'm kind of poking around, I see something about ice drying. And I'm like, oh, what if I made a sheet of resin using this stuff and gave it to the mermaids in Cove, and then they could have this perfectly clear like sheet of something, and then just take an ice cube from like one of the handler's mugs and then just be able to draw on this, and as the ice touches it, it starts turning like a bright blue because it's blue when it's cold and it's clear when it's not. Mm-hmm. And then if they want to erase it, they just dunk it in the water and then it's clear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like there. I keep running into like these random little ideas, or of like, what if I do this?
See, I was thinking of getting some of the color changing stuff, and I have a couple maple branches that I was thinking of making a goblet with the color changing stuff for Lauren.
Oh, sure.
For Lauren Haven. Because I don't know if our listeners know about this, but Lauren loves color-changing cups.
That's true. Oh,
somewhere, she woke up in a cold sweat just now.
Yeah.
It's a color-changing cup!
But it's a maple branch. It's a maple branch that has a huge crack in one side, because as it dried, it cracked. So it needs to have a resin fill in that crack, and I was like, ooh, if I do this color changing thing in that crack, mm-hmm. and then turn a goblet out of it, it'd be cool.
That'd be really cool.
Dang. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
It's, you know, working on resin is really kind of zen, I think. Mm-hmm. When and I know Jess hates this a lot, but The sanding process is very much just like, I'm going to sit down and do this repetitive task, and then everything else is just going to disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Sanding something by hand is nowhere near as satisfying as sanding it on the lathe, though. Sand it on the lathe, all you're doing is turning the lathe on and then running the sandpaper across it as it spins. You're just kind of holding it in place as you see everything kind of change and get clearer and clearer.
Like a magic wand.
It's amazing seeing something that starts off being like looking like frosted glass, but like scratched.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you're done, it's just this beautiful, smooth, ridiculously clear. And it's so satisfying seeing it transform.
Mm-hmm.
And especially with all the shit that's going on right now, having these kind of zen moments has been really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can imagine.
So yeah, and I've been just kind of selling random things here and there that I made. So I've been making these eggs on the lathe that are like, some have Christmas trees embedded in them. Some I've been doing like metallic hollow glitter in to make it look like a pile of like gold or silver, which is kind of cool. I've been making some bottle stoppers off of a mold that I made, which has been really cool. That's been fun. But you know, apparently not as many people need bottle stoppers as I would have initially thought.
Wait, I need bottle stoppers.
That's fair.
I had a lot of luck right before Christmas selling bottle stoppers, but yeah, as soon as Christmas was over, that was the end of that.
Yeah. Well, and the hard thing about a lot of this is just going, I'm going to make a thing. And then once I've made a thing, I'm going to say, does anyone want to buy this thing? Because trying to search for commissions, it just doesn't really work. And I figure if enough people see that I've made a thing that they want, and then they're like, hey, can you make it to be like blue and gold? I can be like, sure. Mm-hmm. And then just do that.
That's a good idea.
So it's been a journey. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then, of course, the dice sets, which I pretty much decided I'm just going to keep making random dice sets. And if they don't sell, then either they'll go to Jess or they'll go to me, or we'll just randomly give them to a friend.
Mm-hmm. So, that's fair.
Could always use more dice.
Mm-hmm. I had a really cool interaction the other day, and I'm not going to name the person, but somebody had bought a recent dice set. And after, we had kind of done the transaction and stuff and talked about at some point I'll be dropping off the dice, I get a message back and the person was like, I feel really, what was the word? It was like, I feel really, it was like classy or something like that, like privileged. It was something along those lines.
Honored. Because
I haven't had a full set of dice for years since in one move, they got lost, and I've just never picked up an actual full matching set. And now I'm going from not having one to having a handcrafted dice set. And as somebody who's making these things as a creator, that felt really cool.
Yes.
The idea that somebody feels very lucky or privileged, or they're spoiling themselves by buying something that I made. So yeah. That's just really neat.
That's awesome.
So yeah, that's a good feeling.
I will say I was looking through because we were talking about dice stuff the other day, and I was like, do I have a complete dice set? And the answer is no. I do not have a complete dice set. And here's my theory. Is that I have a daughter.
That's a theory?
That's a pretty strong hypothesis.
That part, not a theory. That part, fact. Having a daughter, fact. But my daughter loves to do gaming stuff. And my theory is that I have an almost complete set of dice, except I'm missing a D20.
Oh.
So my theory is that I do still technically have a complete dice set, but there's a D20 over at Jess's house, and I'm probably not going to get it back from her anytime soon, so I don't actually have a complete dice set.
Sure, yeah.
This is my theory.
It's a game theory.
When I was picking up molds and was like, it's too expensive to just buy a full set. One of the molds that I got was a D20, so I'm sitting here thinking, you want D20s? I got D20s. I practiced on D20. here, let me show you my...
I mean, I have other D20s. I can do everything that I need to do with dice, but I don't have a set. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have a hodgepodge. I don't have a set.
And there's something satisfying about having that, completed...
I haven't even needed a set in 5 years, but now that I know that I don't have a set, my entire world is
Now it's going to eat at you.
The project manager is having a nervous breakdown over this.
Well, I feel like if I had to guess, that Jenna would want a jewel tone swirl dice set with red and purple glitter.
Oh my god, that's an amazing guess. How did you know, Eric?
It came to me in a dream about a post-it note that's on my desk.
Story checks out.
Who do me next?
All right, Salta, let's go back in time several days and you tell me the exact set of dice you want. and then we'll come forward to this podcast, and then I will tell you what dice you want.
Blue.
Gotcha. That I can do.
That's way less intricate than mine, and probably way more doable.
But I'm no. I mean, blue is the basic, you know, oeuvre. The rest is the rest is bartender's choice.
He's like blue. All the other details, fuck with it.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, you play with it as much as you want. This is
instead of a D20, I'm giving you 10 D2s.
Yeah, no. It's a bespoke commission. You make the choices, and I'm happy with the results. But I would like a set at some point.
We've replaced your D20 with 20 quarters. Flip them and add the heads together.
We've replaced your D20 with Folger's crystals. Let's see if Salta notices.
No, the thing is, like somebody looking at Salsa and being like, roll the hit, and he just has a handful of coffee and throws them on the table.
Oh no, are you kidding? I would do that, and then if somebody asked me about it, I would push up my glasses and I would say, my dice are in binary.
No, it's you try to get as close to 20 grams of measured coffee grounds as possible, and if you go over, then it loops back around. So if you get 22,
it's
then
two.
You've only rolled a two. Yeah.
No. Yeah. All right.
I think this is our best plan.
Oh, I'm sorry. You use physical dice.
That's so last year.
Very decadent conversation, gentlemen.
Right.
I would put it right next to my dice ring.
I gotta tell you, the dice rings are pretty amazing. I showed Eric a completely unnecessarily complicated different set of molds that he might someday be interested in. Barrel shaped dice. It looks like almost like two D20s vacuum sealed together. But
oh,
they
the
have all of these little
dice?
Facets. The what?
The crystal dice?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, barrel or crystal dice, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
I think they look amazing.
Some of those, oh, yeah, they're pretty cool.
But, yeah, no, I just think, Salsa, that if you started doing, like, coffee math, that pretty quickly your dice tower is going to become a French press, and then you're going to forget that D&D even was the point.
Okay, you can't do coffee math until you've had coffee.
Well, like, there's that.
Very important.
This is going to tie in, I promise. I've been watching.
Who are you, Salsa?
I've been
Me?
Watching. I've been watching with my children as a show called Time Team. Okay. Time mm-hmm. Team is a archaeology TV show. It's they mm-hmm. they take the actual real archaeologists. They have 3 days to dig up a site. They've been invited to do archaeology in this location. They come in, they do, you know, radar scans, you know, deep radar scans and electromagnetic scans of the ground to decide where they're going to dig trenches, because they've only got a few days. I don't remember which episode it was we were watching, but they found a six-sided dice.
Oh.
Like a Roman time dice. Mm. But the thing is all of the spots were just kind of there. They weren't in any, like, pattern.
Oh.
Like a square Dalmatian.
Exactly. They had just, like, this is the side for a three. Bam, bam, bam. Three spots.
Sure.
They're not okay. In a row. They're not in a pattern. They're just three spots.
Yeah.
Here's six spots on this side.
A hammer and a chisel and just went, this side's a one? Okay. Bam.
Yeah, it's just like, next. Close your eyes and hit somewhere on the dice. That's where the one is.
Mm.
And it was simultaneously the coolest thing and the most cringeworthy thing. Because
right.
It was a really cool, ancient, thousands-of-year-old dice But all of the it was so the ADD in me was like, no.
I know. I'm having the same problem.
It was so bad.
So in my imagination, there's a guy that walks in, like a crafter that walk, like an apprentice that walks into like his master, and it's like, I came up with a new idea. I call it a die, and then holds this thing out that has the dots in random places, and the crafter looks at it and he goes, seriously, and like chucks it out the window into the dirt. He goes, no, we need a pattern. We need order. What the hell is wrong with you? Have you learned nothing from me? And then that turned into
Jenna Young of Roman times. Guy.
And that one prototype was just thrown out into the dirt where it then sunk. And they found it and they're like, oh my god, all dice. All
dice in one city.
And it's just a random apprentice that like, it's like, look, I made a thing. And the master being like, oh god damn it.
One side of one sheep in Scotland is black. That's the
Eric, you have saved history for me.
I will add it to my accolades. Crafter of dice, saver of history.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, you see Jess playing Chrono Trigger, and you're like, well, I've already done that.
Fancy restaurant, do you know who I am?
This is not a game of who the fuck are you.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Nice.
Sidetrack, like complete brain shift. I did think of a thing that I did.
Okay.
I got my COVID stimulus thing, my COVID cash.
Yay!
Which I didn't know if I was going to get because, like, as far as like my taxable income, right on the edge. Mm-hmm. It was a little, maybe, but I got it, and so I got sushi delivered.
Yes. Heck yes.
For Joe and I. Here's the thing is that Joe and I love getting sushi together, right? Like it's one of our coupledom things. Back before the COVID times, we would go get sushi like at least once a month. Before COVID.
Year 2000.
And we would go to Fujiya. May it rest in and we would go get quality fucking sushi.
Mm-hmm.
This was our shared experience. We'd go up to the sushi bar. We would watch the guy make sushi. We would then consume said sushi. We would glory in the environment.
Oh, say it slower.
Presentation. Mm-hmm. We would fight over nigiri versus sashimi. We would. I'm a buttery fish person. He's a fishy fish person. I'm more in a yellowtail. He's more in a mackerel. Mm-hmm. We would have conversations about what because we both ate everything.
Yeah,
we did not get sushi for ourselves. We got sushi as a couple. Mm-hmm. So if we were getting mackerel. We were getting at least two pieces because we were both having a piece.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's how you sushi. That's couple sushi. I got us some sushi from Kiachi, and I had it delivered to Joe's, and it was all right.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was good. It wasn't. There was nothing wrong with it, and it was very tasty, but it wasn't the experience.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like I'm still missing out on all of the rest of the stuff that goes around.
Mm-hmm. Very much so.
My ordering sushi experience is different than yours, but also as unsatisfying. Jess and I enjoy going to Kyoto.
Sure.
Going out for all you can eat sushi and then just ordering randomly whatever we want and then waddling back to the car and being like, we're going to go home and not move for a day or a half.
Say it slow.
And you can't get that experience through like DoorDash or anything like that because you're like, It's like, what do I want? Well, I want like 12 sets of rolls. Oh, that's like $90.
Nope.
Okay. Let me get these three things. And then it's like, now I'm sad.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, like, I have very fond memories of, and we started it after Molly was my coach for Ville, heading out to sushi with the Glovers. Because it would be like one of us, like, watches the other one's pet. And then, like, for payment and as a thank you, the other family would treat to a night at Kyoto. And we would go there, and I remember Molly being like, we need, like, 40 pieces of red-tail sashimi. And they're like, like, seriously? And she's like, yes.
Yeah.
Like, make it happen.
Are you sure you don't want, like, 10? And she's like, 40.
Yes, 10 for each of us. That's 40.
And, like, they would just start, like, bring out wave after wave of things to the table. And... Jess and Molly would just put away so much red tail sashimi between the two of them.
Shut up! You're making me hungry!
Me too! Me too! And if I have to suffer, so do you!
That's something that I really miss, and that's something that I really look forward to doing again.
Yeah.
Amen. And that's a thing that you just can't get right now.
Yeah.
There isn't a good equivalent to something like that.
There's no equivalent to all you can eat right now, because you are ordering a set amount of food, and that is just happening. Kyoto is where I do my business meetings.
Oh, I know.
It's where I wine and dine people and convince them to write epic fringe shows for me.
That's strangely specific. Mm-hmm.
You know, oddly, Salsa, I disagree.
Kyoto, let me expound upon the glories of Kyoto, because Kyoto does all you can eat sushi. And their sushi, let me be clear, is not as artistic as Kyachi. It is not as fresh, vibrant as Fujiya used to be. May it rest in peace. But it is still good sushi.
Yep.
Right? It goes beyond getting the job done. It's not just we had sushi. It's good sushi. And it's good sushi at a really good fucking price. All you can eat for like what, $25?
Yep.
For like lunch. And
it turns out all I can eat is a lot.
You realize you're in America, right? Because we can just shovel that shit right the fuck in.
There's a point where you're like, yeah, I'm pretty much done. And then they're like, hey, we brought your latest order. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got this.
Hold on. Let me get my belt.
Bring me some more of that eel to wash it down.
I'm just going to undo my top button here, and there we go. That's good for a few more pieces.
I'm going don't worry, I have sweatpants under.
They're like, if you leave anything on your plate, you are paying extra for that. And I think that is one way of like curbing the whole don't order more than you're going to eat.
Yep.
Oh, sure.
But you are going to eat it. So it kind of doesn't matter.
Right. And if you're still eating it while they're like, are you going to order more? And you're like, I'm ready for the bill. And you're still eating, they won't charge you. And then when they bring you the bill, you're like, okay, I can leave these last two pieces.
But I don't.
Sneaky. No. Yeah.
Also, just as a capper, they have a sake mango mojito, which is like the best. Just in case you were like, well, I'm not really a fish person.
I'm hungry for Moto E.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That makes me think of the one time we did the Ville karaoke a number of years ago, and we went to this random karaoke place that was in the back of like a Japanese restaurant, I think, and they served soju. And we all just kept ordering so much, like, like, I you know, raspberry soju, and they bring in this weird bottle of, like, this mixed drink, and you're just like, cool. All right, now I'm going to have this other flat. And they ran out of, like, soju containers because we had ordered
Oh, no. If that was here in the cities, that might have been Sushi X.
Could be. I don't remember.
Because I know that they have soju. They have the Korean barbecue. They have all-you-can-eat sushi and...
the back karaoke?
Yeah,
they do. The private karaoke?
Yep. Yeah.
I just want to do something with people again.
I know.
Weird.
Yep.
But also, have you met people? They're kind of terrible.
I have. And, you know, there are some that I'm okay with.
Aw.
I mean, not you, Salsa, but...
Oh, God, no.
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 Salsa doesn't like doing things with people anyway.
Right. Like, you're off the list. It's fine.
So there was a thing going around the internet that was just like, you know, I want to be the house that everybody shows up to, and I say, I was just making tea, do you want a cup? And, you know, blah, 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 and all that. And I realized that, yeah, that sounds like the perfect thing for me, because I would get to interact with the people that I like, but they would come to me, and I wouldn't have to leave my house. You know
what I mean? That is... one of the reasons why I moved into an apartment complex with a party room and a rooftop lounge, so that I can entice people to come to me. And also, the party room isn't actually my apartment. So now we can just do whatever. Like, that's fine.
But it's still your space. You don't have to leave and go places. Yeah.
But I don't have to go. I don't have to drive. It's great.
See,
I thought I'd been
something really
strains of Valley High coming from the west.
There's something really appealing about being the person who's like, if you need me, I will be there for you, and being able to support your friends. There's something really, really appealing about being able to do that, and then couple that with, but I'm not going anywhere or leaving my house.
Yeah. All right.
You know, like, have just
I will be
explained
there for you
me
as long as you come
tea.
Here. Like, I will do anything for you except for leave my house.
That's me.
This is a really good... this is actually a pretty good example of me as a person, not just what you said, although that feeds into it. But I had a friend message me just a couple hours ago that I haven't talked to in 5 fucking years. Like, seriously, 5 years. And they messaged me, and they're like, hey, Jenna, I know it's been a long time since we've chatted, but what do you know about blah, blah, blah? And I was like, oh, well, you want to do blah, 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 and you might want to check into this thing. And they're like, okay, cool, thanks. And then I was like, I've got to work on some stuff, but it was lovely hearing from you. And they were like, cool, chat with you later. And I probably won't talk to that friend again for another 5 fucking years until one of us needs something. But that like, to me, just kind of encapsulates, like, I don't reach out well. It's not a thing of mine. And I have huge issues with, like, reaching out and then not getting any back, and then I just shut and close up kind of a thing. But, like, when somebody is in need, I will be there. Kind of a thing. So like, it was just kind of this just like this reminder of how I friend, and I think that like anybody just showed up at my door and was like, hey, I need a thing, I'd be like, cool, come in here, have some coffee, let's chat, like, you know, that kind of a thing.
I absolutely get that, and as a guest, I think I could talk about that for another significant amount of time, Salsa.
Yes, let's do.
Hey, Eric, why don't you talk about that some more? I'm really interested in your viewpoints on
that.
Yes,
go ahead.
Extremely interested.
Nah, I'm good. No, I do relate to that a lot, but also Sasso is the person that I message about projects, so he's the one I'll probably be talking to more about this, so I'm just not gonna piss him off too much.
Okay.
All right.
You know, if we were having in-person Die Laughing meetings, Jenna, my decision might be different.
Ooh.
But that's not possible this year for safety purposes. So I have distance and you can't throw things at me.
My input on this whole thing is that I miss sleeping on my friend Charles's couch. I miss his dogs. I miss just watching television with him and doing nothing and just being there.
I get that.
I understand.
Okay, well, on that note, I guess we'll take a break. Dear listeners, as always, weigh in on whatever it is.
Whatever?
Sure. And we'll be back in a little bit.
If you guys like what you heard, you can visit us on our website at aonpodcast.com. If you want to talk to us directly, you can send us an email at either Jenna, Salsa, or James at aonpodcast.com, or collectively at feedback@aonpodcast.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, Brandon Patton was kind enough to give us the music for this episode and every episode. You can see what he's up to at brandonpatton.com. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, but especially you can help us out by rating our show. Check out our merch. You can go to society6.com/AON podcast.
And we're back. I'm Salsa.
I'm Jenna.
I'm Eric.
And you know what? We should do a Fast Five.
Fast we Five. Should.
Give us a minute.
The Fast Five today comes from me.
Yay!
Because when I heard at the beginning of the show when you were like, oh shit, we have to do our own Fast Five, who's up this week? Mm-hmm. Because listeners, seriously, get on it. It's fun to poke fun at them. I went...
Hey, accurate.
I mean...
Yeah, I went, I've sent Fast Fives before. I could just pull up an old one and we'll see what happens.
I mean...
So of the two that stood out in my mind, one is from 2013.
Oh, shit.
And the other is from 2019.
Oh.
But I think I'm going to go with the 2019 one because... Really?
Bold
move. Yeah. Because even though it's more recent, I think it will be better discussion.
Okay.
So question number one. Europe.
Yeah, you got to wait for the ding now. The ding is...
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's critical.
Okay.
Europe. Or Asia?
I prefer the Asian dragon. There's something about the windy, serpenty.
Are we still doing phrasing? Okay.
That's what I call Joe, is my Asian dragon. Okay. Are you happy now?
Jesus, no. No,
I'm not.
You asked for it. You.
This is your fault. And to be clear, I am ignoring all memory of what I might have put for the context. So
yeah,
I didn't know that there were so many times that we got like Eastern or Western, and it was written, and it happened like four fucking times or something. So when
I hope that doesn't happen here.
Hilarious to me, but I also hope it doesn't happen here.
Going European.
I'm gonna say. I'm going to say European because I spent more time in the European countries than I did in Japan.
All right, I'm going with Asia. So we have everyone in for this one, I think?
Yep.
I think so.
Question number two. Europe or Asia?
Son of a bitch, this is the dragon. For this one, I am going to go, fuck.
You're going to go fuck?
It's not one of the choices, I know.
I'm going with Europe on this one as well.
That's fair.
I'm going to go...
Do you have imagined context also?
I do, yes.
Okay.
Oh.
No, so, I'm just accepted at this point. I got my answer. We're done.
I'm going to say
it's happened.
Europe, because the Final Countdown was a much bigger hit than any of Asia's.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Wow. Okay. Oh God, I'm sure this makes for great podcast.
I feel like it does.
I prefer Asian fabrics to European fabrics.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna go with Europe for this one for absolutely no reason, because I'm doing my best to not get in my own head, because I wrote questions.
I love lost, that you don't... Wait, so you didn't actually look at the context, Derek?
Correct.
So you're just as in the dark as we are.
I remember what I put in for some of the context, but I don't remember which question it's...
Oh, there's no way to know. Yeah, okay. All right.
So I could tell you that one might have to do with food, but I don't fucking know which one it is.
No, I assumed one of them was food.
So
I figured
I'm completely in the dark.
Probably be number
so my
three.
Number two is here. Right. All right, are we on to question number three? Europe or Asia?
This one's Asia.
Absolutely shocked. And I'm
going Asia on this one, and I assumed this was the food one.
So I'm going to assume this is the food one too, and I'm going to go Europe, because I feel like Europe has more. Oh no, shit, that doesn't work.
I know my answer.
What is it?
My answer is Europe, because when I play Risk, I never, out of random draw, I never end up with any amount of countries in Asia. I always get Europe and the Americas, and my European countries get wiped out. So I'm always trying to attack from America into Europe to protect the countries that I have.
Okay. So Europe or Asia, we're pretending this one is about food because Salsa declared it. I'm going to go with it.
Don't follow my lead on this shit.
No.
I may as well put it here as opposed to question number four where it actually is. So anyway. But okay, so here's where I went. I was like, which has the better peasant food? And like my brain switched to Europe because I know of so much peasant food in Europe, but the peasant food in Asia is great. So I'm gonna make it even. I'm gonna consolidate it even further into
more specific than peasant food,
huh?
More specific than peasant food?
Yes.
So you have, as far as travelable peasant food, in Europe you have the hand pie. And in Asia, you have your steamed dumplings. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So between the two of those, I think I have to go with the steamed buns. I'm sorry, I said dumplings. I've been drinking wine and was sober for a month. So, steam bun. I think steam bun versus hand pie. Oh, God. Steam bun is so fucking good. But, yeah, as far as, like, peasant travel food,
see,
I'm going to go Asia.
I'm going, as far as food goes, I'm going just Nepalese food.
Yeah.
All right.
Really, anything that involves rice with ghee, I'm there.
You're not wrong.
Really, anything with ghee anyway. In it.
If we're collectively deciding this is the food question, I am very much torn between all of the beautiful Italian flavors and amazing things that are like my heritage and my family growing up and all these family recipes that I then go on to butcher by changing because I think differently.
You mean French food?
But still love the flavors. Against things like pho and sushi and these beautiful Chinese dishes, and then you get up into some of the Russian foods and Indian
I'm so hungry right now.
So I'm going to have a knee-jerk reaction and say Asian. Asian as a knee-jerk.
All right.
So question number four. Europe or Asia? I'm going to say Europe. I don't know why, but I am.
I
feel like I've chosen Asia all three of these. I'm going to say, which housing style would I rather live in? And I'm going to go with European on this one. A nice stone cottage.
That's a good question that I don't know whether or not I included.
I answered it regardless.
On my bucket list of places to visit before I die.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically my short list, because I have enough places on my bucket list that I have a short list as well. On my short list of places to visit before I die, there are more places in Europe than Asia.
Huh.
Fair enough.
That's fair.
I am going to say...
My top two... I want to dovetail into what Salsa said real quick. My top two... are Ireland and Japan. So I'm kind of fucked either way.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently I like islands.
Fair enough.
The next vacation that I would love to do is start at the Orkneys in northern Scotland. Actually, sorry, the Outer Hebrides in northern Scotland. Go to the Orkneys.
Yeah.
Then move to like blanking on the name now because I've been drinking a lot. The islands between Norway and Scotland, then up to the islands that are between Iceland and Scotland, like that whole like.
You're just gonna take an island trip.
Yeah, I want to do that.
Nice.
I want to do that.
God. All right.
It's a strong
half proof treating you.
It's. Pretty. I'm almost. The bottle is empty, and I have half a glass remaining in my glass.
Very nice.
I'm out with my wine, so I am.
This is where I'm at a glass two of whiskey. Of full glasses of whiskey, which is a mistake. It's a mistake. I'm glad I'm making.
I was gonna say.
James, did you toss out an answer for that one?
I am going to say that I like the furniture of Asia more, but I have bought more European furniture because of IKEA. If we're counting IKEA as part of, you know, Europe in the if we're counting Sweden, Sweden, the IKEA, the country,
IKEA's own nation.
Yeah. Even the Kotatsu that I have is made out of IKEA furniture. But
somebody in Japan is really sad about this. Salsa.
It's the Hebrides to the Orkneys to the Shetlands to the Faroe Islands.
But we need the Falkland Islands for strategic sheep purposes.
No, not the Falklands.
God.
Shetlands. I believe we're on number five now?
Yes.
Europe or Asia?
I'm going Asia on this one.
Yeah.
Because I like their elephants. I know there's not European elephants, it's African elephants, but I'm going to Asia. Because I've been drinking
Hannibal
a lot.
Tried to change that.
If I had to sleep in a European bed or an Asian bed, I'm probably going to be way more comfortable in a European bed.
Oh, maybe not. The hostel that I stayed at in Japan, all of the beds had individual heaters.
What?
Mm-hmm. In addition to the kotatsu, all of the beds had individual heat pads that you set.
Do they have cooling pads?
It doesn't matter. Irrelevant. James, I want you to send me some links.
Okay. All right. Yeah, okay. That can happen.
Okay.
For this question, based on peer pressure, I am selecting Asia.
All right.
I am also selecting Asia purely because I think it's a choice between graveyards and European graveyards are super gothic and cool, Asian, the graveyard that I went to in Japan was actually serene.
Yeah, this shows clearly how much James knows me.
All right.
So let's look over at this email.
Show me potato salad.
Years ago. Question number one. If you could travel with the specific purpose of sampling authentic cuisine,
where would you go?
So food right off the bat. I had picked Asia.
I think I picked Asia for this reason, for dragons. I think I'm still going to Asia. Here's the thing. I have had sushi. We talked about sushi earlier in this podcast.
Yes.
And Joe and I sushi together. I it's a tough call because I have a love of various types of European cuisine too. But I want sushi in Japan. If I'm going to travel for food, I want fish that is barely dead and just stopped wiggling on a bed of rice on my plate. That is what I want. So for travel purposes, I'm going to go Asia.
No, I need to switch mine around because I have already had pizza and pasta in Italy. I have already had cheese and chocolate in Switzerland. I have already had bratwurst and sauerkraut in Germany.
Son of a bitch.
I have already had fish and chips in Ireland. So Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at the European foods that you can travel through, there are some really good options there. But just the sheer vastness of different cuisines in Asia I wouldn't be normally exposed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
being able to have like pad thai and pho in Thailand, being able to go to Japan and have traditional sushi and Japanese cuisine, traveling through all the different areas in China, up into Russia, into India, and having like the massive spice trade that happened through there, to be able to experiment with all that would just be crazy.
To be able to see firsthand the actual difference between Sichuan and Mandarin and Cantonese cooking, for example, like, would be fantastic. It wouldn't all just be Chinese food.
Or Sichuan is these collection of spices.
Exactly. Like to be able to find out what delineates Vietnamese food and Cambodian food, you know?
Right.
Like, that sort of would be pretty
And dope. Monkey's brains, while popular in Cantonese cuisine, are not often to be found in Washington, D.C.
I can't have Thai food because of the peanuts and the coconut all just kind of smushed together.
Mm-hmm.
So there are various things within Asia that I'm just straight up allergic to. But I also shouldn't have dairy, and that just permeates Europe. So I'm kind of fucked either way.
Like, as much as I feel like I would love, like, authentic German and Austrian cuisine, which I've had places that have claimed that, but never actually been to Europe to have that. Yeah, I would love that, but I feel like the options through the Asian food tour would be just incredible.
Yeah. And again, curry in Nepal? Fuck yes, I want that.
Yeah.
Borscht in Russia? Fuck yes, I want that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right.
All right. Question number two. If you could only use products produced in one continent, which would you pick?
I think I was close because I did say, or at least on the right trail with this one, because I said fabrics.
Sure.
And I am also a huge fan of bamboo.
I also like
that. I feel like Asia has a much larger production standpoint. And while there are some cool things that come out of Europe, I don't know that I have as many things out of Europe as I do out of Asia.
James, video games.
You're going to have to get rid of all of your IKEA furniture.
Oh, video games is an excellent point.
But at the same time, like Toyota, Kia.
Yeah. Subaru.
I do have a Honda.
Yeah. Like Toyota. Mitsubishi. Toyota are indestructible. You know, those are some solid cars. Nintendo.
Mm-hmm. Those are some indestructible cars.
Like Volkswagen is great, but that's not a brand that I use or, you know.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I think I gotta go Asia.
I gotta go Asia.
As long as Asia doesn't include Russian, because I don't want to buy a Russian car.
No,
I mean it's not saying that you have to. It's saying you can.
No, I know. I'm just saying. I feel like Russia's not known for their automobiles for a reason.
What? No, they're known. They are known for their automobiles, but not in a good way.
Not for the reason we want to.
Yeah, the Lada is not a pinnacle of engineering in the positive sense.
But you guys, my Krumkaka iron.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Aww. You just have to buy a Japanese Krumkaka iron.
Yeah. We introduced the new 2020 Lada with hot and cold running brake fluid.
No, that's not what a Krumkaka. Never mind.
I think this is revenge for earlier.
All right, so question number three.
Mm-hmm.
You need to spend a week in a podunk town in the middle of nowhere in a random country in the continent of your choice. Which do you choose?
I would go Europe.
I would probably go Europe, too.
In Europe, there's a 40% chance that I speak at least some of the language.
Yeah, I regrettably agree.
You guys, in Europe, there's a 20% chance, but in Asia, I am the fairest-skinned motherfucker they've ever seen, and there is an 80% chance I'm ending up in a brothel somewhere. So
like, if it was like a main town in Asia, then my understanding would be that every other person is going to be like, oh, let me practice my English on you, and you'd be fine. But a podunk town in Asia, not so much.
Jenna, my older sister is a 5'6" bright red-haired woman, and she taught English in China for a year, and they called her a tall blonde, and she thought it was the coolest thing ever. Because in China, if your hair's not black, you're blonde.
Yeah.
So she was a tall blonde for a year. And she just thought it was the coolest fucking thing.
I mean, let's be clear. In Asia, I'm not tall either. But I am very fair-skinned. I'm incredibly fair-skinned. And, that's actually more concerning to me in Asia in a in a deep dive situation.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
Yeah, I feel like it would be very easy to find me in one country and not the other continent. Pardon me, not country, but continent.
I feel like the story would be better in Asia, but I would land on my feet a lot easier in Europe.
Sure, yeah.
Although...
Don't you have some kind of European story about, like, the mafia or something?
I mean, that's Bert Kreischer, but...
Okay.
I did have a policeman pinch my ear once.
I think it was Salsa that had some kind of, like a train ride, or maybe that was James.
That was Bert Kreischer.
Okay.
I think I know the story you're talking about, the machine.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, machine. Yeah, it's famous comedy sketch. Anyway, go ahead. Not sketch, stand up. Okay. Go ahead.
Question number 4. You are only allowed to have alcohol from either Europe or Asia, nowhere else. Which do you choose?
Son of a bitch.
I'm going Europe.
Yep. Europe.
It sounds callous to say it so quickly, but they've got the German beer, and they've got scotch, and they've got Irish whiskey, and that's my happy place. I enjoy sake, but I'm going Europe.
Like, here's the thing, is that I enjoy cider, I enjoy wine. But I also drink an awful lot of vodka and sake.
But there's Swedish vodka.
Okay, well that tips me over to European, I think. There's Swedish vodka, really? You and I are going to have a conversation later.
Yeah, you have to assemble yourself. But...
Memories with Asian... A lot of fun memories with, like, Asian liqueurs, where it's like, oh, we did this really cool thing, and then we were drinking soju all night, or, you know, oh, we did this thing, and we were drinking sake. But I feel like casually I would come across more things that are European.
Right. Like, I do my sake crawl almost every year for my birthday. But that's because that's not something that we generally consume.
Sure.
Like it's more of a fun out there kind of thing. So, yeah. I'm going to say if I am limited, I will probably go European.
I mean, the fun out there stuff in Europe starts to get really herbal and, in my opinion, horrible. So I feel like I would lose a lot of the random fun things. Mm-hmm. But in general, my standard drinking style would not change significantly if I stuck with Europe.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. No, I agree. Also, ask me sometime about Schwarzhog.
All right.
Pig.
Yeah, but no, Jenna, like Svedka and Absolut are Swedish vodka brands.
I didn't really. I didn't know. I'm bad at European.
So question number 5. Mm-hmm. The context for that, I had decided that I was changing whatever was the weirdest last one before this, which this was a weird one. So the context is changing into if you would prefer to consume one style of comedy, which style of comedy would you consume?
European. There is something to be said for the wackiness of a lot of Asian although, oh God, if we're including Russia, there's a lot of variety there to be had. Still, between the wackiness of a lot of the Eastern Asian stuff versus the nihilistic Russian stuff.
Jesus.
Wow, juxtaposition. I think I would go European just because so much. There's, it's less extreme, but very like dry and just kind of like deadpan to a certain extent. Like I like British comedy because their wacky is like contained wacky and fits within my project manager parameters.
Fair enough.
As opposed to like Eastern Asian, where I'm like, what? Why would you even? I don't understand. What are the? Is it?
And why are they naked?
Yeah. Why are you naked? Why is there slime? And why is there money on the line for this? I'm really confused as to what's going on right now. I feel like I just understand European comedy better, and that might be because of my background.
Fair.
But like,
I think one of my favorite things about Asian style of comedy is how kind of ingrained and layered it becomes, because it seems like everything that I like, a lot of these things that I've seen have become like, we have transformed this entire hospital into a place run by actors, and the male boy in this hospital is like the equivalent of Tom Cruise in Japan, who we have this random walk-on role for no reason, who is going to show up and then get yelled at by someone, and then he's going to leave, and the entire thing is this weird cameo that everyone just kind of goes, was that really him? And just kind of like, a lot of it has this really weird, like this weird juxtaposition to real life. Or
okay, sure.
Like one of the things I've showed James is like, you know,
yeah.
Oh, we're gonna have this person in a condo, but we're just gonna throw pies at him all day. Like it's this weird kind of like id version of comedy for me, where it's like, here's this random fucking thing that is too insane to ever work. Let's just do it. And there's something that really appeals to me about just letting those baser performer instincts go and just see what happens.
No, I get that. I think it's not my style, but I think I
totally
get
fair. Totally fair.
There
I do
is,
love that.
There is a level of absurd in the Eastern Asian comedy, but I feel like there's also a level of absurd in British comedy.
Sure.
And honestly,
hello.
Yeah, and honestly, there are a couple of German comedians that I would love to pay more attention to. There's a comedian by the name of Stefan Raab, who had a kind of a he had a show called TV Total, which was a kind of bloopers of the week show, like where newscasters would flub something on live TV, or you know, something weird happened on a game show. Like his show was all about highlighting the bloopers on that show, and it was hilarious. Because not only was the show format funny, but he as a comedian was really funny. And I kind of miss seeing that.
Sure.
So I think I would go Europe. Yeah.
I think I have to go Europe. If not for Eddie Izzard and Douglas Adams, then definitely for Noel Fielding and Richard Ayoade.
There is that.
I do have Eddie Izzard book on my shelf.
She's amazing.
I'm biased.
Fair. All right. Well, that would be the last context.
That was it.
If you would like to send in a Fast Five, please send two emails to salsa@aonpodcast.com. The first one should include nothing but the choices and any filler text you wish to supply. And the second one, repeat those choices, give us the context, and any other filler text you wish to supply. Who's got a shout-out?
I have a couple of shout-outs.
Do it.
but it's all contained in the same thing. I have been working on getting a solid collection of vilification tennis trading cards. And I've had various people reaching out to me with spares, extras, or cards that they're just not using anymore to help complete my collection. And I just there are a couple of people that are that have been involved with this, and just Sarah, Aaron, Maggie, a few others that have talked about possibilities. Robin, just because vilification tennis was such a big part of my life for like 18 fucking years, like being able to complete this collection. I don't want anybody to regret giving me cards. Like, oh man, I miss having that card. God damn it. But like people reaching out and being like, hey, but I have this card is just super sweet and super kind. And so it's a shout out to those people, but also just kind of a shout out to the good parts of our Fest community, because they all have been Fest people. And just that kind of sharing, giving nature of the people within the community.
Yeah.
So I want to give a shout out to that.
Nice.
Lovely. James?
Beat that.
I would like to give a shout out to my friend and former landlord, Charles. When I have found in these last few months that I need advice, that I need solace, that kind of stuff, it's there really is not anything like someone who has known you for functionally your entire life. Other people have been amazing as support, and giving me fun things to do. And just like warm, heartfelt feelings, but this shout out is to him, to Charles, because he's just fucking great. He's added so much to my life. So many of the things about me that I like the most come from being friends with him.
Eric, do you have one?
Sure.
You don't have to have one. You're a guest.
It's I do. this requires a sigh first. So occasionally on Facebook, when I'm having a hard time, I will make a post that is asking people to share things that they're proud of. Or that they're happy about, or they're looking forward to, or anything positive. And I do that because it's oftentimes we look at the negative in our own lives instead of trying to celebrate things. So to try to get out of my own head, I will post things like that. And usually I get a really overwhelming response, and I tell myself I will respond to everyone who comments. And I've done that a handful of times. So my shout out is going to go to everyone who finds something beyond just getting by in all of this. Because everything we're going through right now is a lot. Yeah. And there are people who are finding reasons to be happy and reasons to celebrate and reasons to find hope. And that is magical with everything that's happening. So,
yeah.
Keep going.
I'm going to give my shout out to hobbies. Because, I mean, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone that, you know, people are not able to do a lot of the things that they would normally be able to do. And so finding something to do with your hands, with your time, to fill the hours that you would usually spend going out to the store you know, shopping, you know, going to shows, hanging out with friends, you know, all of the, we suddenly find ourselves with so many hours of time, and I am so inspired by so many people that I know who have looked for ways to keep themselves sane and have found hobbies that they normally might not have thought of doing, but now have the time to do, or alternatively have always wanted to, but never had the time, and now are doing. And in both situations, it's so wonderful just to see the things that people are creating and making and filling their time with. You know, there are so many people you look out in the landscape of Facebook as they post the quilts that they're knitting and the sweaters that they're knitting and the beautiful woodwork that people are creating and the amazing carvings that they're doing, the art that they're creating and stuff like that. It's so inspiring to see just all of the creativity that's happening because of it. Go hobbies.
Yeah.
Yay.
All right. Does anybody have anything to plug?
I do.
Well, then you'd best do it.
In addition to the, thanks to everybody who came out to see the Game Night with the Ranger shows, one. Two, there is at the end of the month, the Real Housewives of Vilification Tennis coming up. But we are also getting back into Vil Interruptus. So we will have a Vil Interruptus show in the middle of this month, and I am very much looking forward to being on that, because it offers a rarely seen outside of that, a rarely seen structure cage match, which is a free-for-all, no-holds-barred, and Royal Rumble. So please do come and see that. And also, thank you to everybody for your support during the January show, raising funds for the Bryant Lake Bull. We love you, and we appreciate all that you do.
Anyone else? Jenna?
I actually, on my quest to plug things that aren't actually me directly, but Strike Theater has a fundraiser that is happening for the weekend of Valentine's Day. Actually, I think it's going on now. But they are doing a fundraiser called Mouthgasm. So here's the deal, is that every year for Valentine's Day weekend, Strike Theater allows, I believe it's Word Sprout, but it might be Slam MN or some other storytelling group, to do a Valentine's Day extravaganza of storytelling. I got to participate in this last year. There was storytelling, there was aerial events, there was clowning, there was like, it was just this crazy Valentine's Day circus erotica storytelling thing that happened, and it was amazing. But obviously this year, much more tricky. So because Strike Theater is one of those venues that can't do shows right now and still has to pay rent, they're one of those groups that I have concerns for their viability past COVID times. So they're doing a fundraiser called Mouthgasm. It's a Valentine's Day fundraiser for Strike Theater. I will post a link in the events, but you can go to Strike Theater on Facebook. Go like them, because you should like them. They're fantastic. And they will be presenting Mouthgasm, a culinary and poetic fundraiser for Strike Theater. Pick your package and add-ons below. We know many of you have spent over a decade of Valentine's Days, some of you 2 decades, with, aha, it is Slam MN. And we don't want to break the streak this year, even though we can't gather due to COVID. Strike Theater has been closed since last March. We put our heads together, came up with some ways to celebrate. So they are basically selling fundraiser packages that include things like there's a wooden spoon with a little heart cut out of it, which is adorable, some sprinkles, there's some recipes. There are some homemade heart crackers. There's a couple's tarot reading that you can purchase. They have a whole bunch of stuff on here. So I'll share the link. Go click it, take a look, see if there's a package that speaks to you. Please continue to support our physical locations. We've already had several physical locations closed down due to COVID. When we are all able to gather again in 6 months to a year is my rough guess. It would be wonderful to continue having these locations available to be able to perform in. So I have concerns. So yeah, I will share this link. Give your support to Strike either through one of these packages or just donate to Strike Theater in general. Yeah.
Eric?
No, I've Game Night with Ranger was the thing that I was running with for a little while, and that has wrapped, so I'm good for a bit.
You don't have a podcast or anything like that to mention?
You know, at this point, we haven't been recording for a bit. So if you want to find old episodes, you can go to thehighfiveguys.com, and you'll find old episodes of our podcast, but most of that is all pre-quarantine before things fell apart.
Well, let me throw this at you. If any of our listeners are interested in a set of dice, is that something that they can find you somewhere, or...
Currently, you can find me on Facebook. You can send a message to Eric Thompson if you find me on there. We're working on getting pages set up, but we're still trying to figure out names and things around that.
That's
so
fair.
I'm sure I'll share information once we get stuff set, but as for right now, if you send a message to my personal page, it should give me a heads up, and we'll see what we can find out.
Once you have those things set up, we could have you on as a guest again. I know that's ridiculous. I know it's crazy.
That's amazing.
In the meantime, if you happen to not know who Eric is on Facebook and there's too many Eric Thompsons and you don't know which one to use, send us a message. We will make sure that we get you in contact with Eric for that. If you want,
I appreciate
if
that.
If you want a tiny little Christmas tree inside of an egg, we will make sure that you get that. All right.
I do love them. They're adorable.
They are beautiful.
Quite cute. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I would like to say bye. Perfect. Love you. Bye.
All right. In that case, that is the end of our episode. Thank you so very much to everyone for listening. Thank you to Eric Thompson for being on our show. On behalf of myself and James and Jenna, eat the fucking cake.
Come here, my rubber orangutan. Let me feel your nipples.